Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is writer-director Harley Wallin, whose new, paranormal horror thriller, Agrimmon's Gate, is out now, available on VOD at your favorite digital outlets. The movie is very intense, but also creative and, from a visual effects standpoint, quite unique. Welcome, Harley.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Summer. And I dig the name of your show, too. I'm a big sci-fi fan. So, I grew up with a Star Wars impression and even Star Trek. And it was called Moonbase Alpha.
Oh, yeah.
I loved all that stuff.
Yep. Science fiction, horror, paranormal, thriller, even some wacky action. We try to cover all of the fun films and TV shows here. But you have
a
unique indie horror thriller to add to the mix here. You wrote and directed Agrimmon's Gate, and you also have a co-lead part. Tell us how this project came to you as a writer and how you got it on the path to production.
So I'm very influenced by a lot of film before me, and horror is a genre I really love. So that's why it took so long for me to get to it, because I know the audience is pretty tough on the ones they love. So I wanted to build it the best way I knew how when we got to making the film. And I love these movies like Fallen with Denzel Washington, where it's not necessarily a horror film, but there are some aspects of it that's horror. And then I love the puzzle pieces of a Saw. And then I love to pay homage to the older films that really develop story and characters, just as if it was any other kind of film, except that the subject matter and the plot was horror related. So yeah, it's an awful lot of things. I mean, I grew up reading Stephen King and Wes Craven and Dean Koontz. So I definitely have a lot of people ahead of me on this one.
Well, the movie is about a house party, a party for a bunch of friends being thrown, and one of the members of the party invites over a psychic, a spiritualist who is going to perform readings for people. And our lead, Richie Stan, is a little bit skeptical of the whole spiritual realm. So the idea comes up to do a seance with the entire group, and things go badly. They go sideways.
Yeah, they sure do.
The rest of the movie is spent cleaning up, or actually trying to divine what the problem is and trying to figure out how to clean up the mess. So my first question, since you are the writer, where did this premise come from? What inspired you to write this particular story?
I've always been fascinated by demons and their powers. So I wanted to go into some form of demonic possession without it being, the exorcist style of possession. So that was the original thing. And in all honesty, I Googled demons and powers, and I just sat there and just scrolled and scrolled and scrolled. I found Agrimmon, and it was the demon of fear, and how it shows up at your house, a spirit, but then it knows you so well that it appears as, as anything it wants to scare you. And the more scared you get, the more powerful the demon becomes. And I said, oh, this is definitely the one. I like the name of the demon. I like the how it worked. So it was like a perfect fit for me. And that was just how it had to be. As far as the story, I think, you know, when you're thinking of all these things that happen in horror films that, that kind of brings them together, such as, you know, house parties and campouts and all that stuff, I wanted something like that that I know that we've seen before, where a lot of people are at a house, or whether we have to figure out who's the killer or whatever. I wanted that mood. And there's so many campfire tales right now that I wanted to pick a different path.
It always starts with a group of people having a party. There's lots of alcohol or other substances. Yep. And somebody says, hey, let's call a demon. Really? No.
Yep. It's a very familiar path, for sure.
Well, the I don't want to go on any spoilers, but the fears that the demon actually raises in the characters is palpable, because you see them starting to freak out. You see them starting to lose control of themselves, lose control of their emotions, mm-hmm. and let themselves be taken over by that fear. And then you have the people, Vesena and Zeb, who you are playing Zeb.
Yeah.
They are the ones trying to battle this demon. And they are not even sure at first who they are fighting. So the push-pull of people trying to figure out what's going on and who they're fighting and how best to defeat them is a real interesting storytelling choice, because you have a lot of things in the mix here. You have one group of people on one side doing some trying to figure out what's going on. You have another group of people still confused and not sure what this is connected to. And there's the confusion seems to add to the fear. Was that intentional?
Yeah, I find myself really loving things like The Haunting of Hill House or Bird Box or Quiet Place, Silent Place. Because I think when you don't always see clearly what your fears are, when there is mysteriousness to the to what you're chasing, it becomes a bit liquid and it's so hard to grab it. It's a lot easier. I know Michael Myers is behind me hunting me with a knife. It's very scary because it's very specific, but it's also really scary to not know, but I feel watched. I heard something. There may be someone in my house. So I just chose to do a mixture of the storytelling in the way where it's a bit mysterious and we don't really know what's going to happen. And then that's one of my loves, because I'm the guy who will watch a film and 15 minutes into it, I'll turn to my wife and say, "I'm going to tell you how it's going to go and how it's going to end." And she says, "No." And then she'll turn back and say, "Okay." And then I'll say it. And I'm right 99% of the time. So I love it when somebody takes me for a surprise and throws a curveball that I just don't see. So I think that's a big part of me as a filmmaker, to really enjoy giving a mystery and a plot where it's not always just served on a platter. I love you as an audience to think and put your phones away and watch this thing, because otherwise you'll miss pieces that are crucial to solve the puzzle.
Now, the one thing that was both well done and confusing was the manifestation of the spirit. There's one manifestation that appears to be our main character's evil father, who is deceased. And then there's another one that seems to be a female, shall we say, creature of the dead.
A young Asian creature of the dead demon. Yes.
That
is actually the original shape of what we decided. Agramon's origin is that. And we justified her vengeance to humanity to be because she was, you know, as a human, she was at a very young age just absolutely trashed by her circle of humanity. And when she died, her price was to be able to come back and haunt with these powers. And the incredible choice to make the manifestation of being Richie's father was knowing that she had a mentally ill mother, and the father was clearly also. So that's creeping in his head always. So that's how it shows at first when it was so weak, because she knew that that was going to send fear into every one of them. There's actually a third shape of the demon that most people miss. But when the mother is suddenly at the house, that is also the demon, because that is terrifying when you realize that it got in between everyone. And if it would have been strong enough at that point to cause physical harm, it would have, and it could have killed them all. And I think that to not know the next time I see my mother, my wife, my sister, my brother, it could be them. I thought that was a really interesting way to make people really paranoid. And I hope that I succeeded at that.
The manifestation, the possibility that the demon could manifest as another person, that as a running thread was a point of suspense that was well done. For me, it took me a while to figure out what the girl was doing. And that there's no place in the story where it's explained why she does what she does. Like the story, the backstory you just gave is like, oh, okay. But that's not mentioned in the movie at all. And I really, really wish it was, because that would have added another level of tension, because people would wonder, is this the same demon? Is this a second demon? Did more than one come through? What's going on here? Especially later, spoiler alert, when the when the priest and Zeb say, hey, this isn't Agrimon, this is your father. There's that doubt there, that what have we been fighting all along? We've been preparing for a supernatural manifestation, and it's really just a ghost. It's a ghost, not a demon. But it's an evil ghost, and that doubt, you see everybody go, okay, what are we doing now? That was fun to play with, to see them doubt themselves, like, okay, what are we really fighting here?
And especially under the premise of that if you do communicate with a demon, it can't lie. So if it says that it isn't the demon, that it is the father, that means they're both here. Or is it one? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really an intriguing way to go about it, I think. And if it worked, I'm happy. But I get your backstory. I ended up with an hour and 50 of a movie, which they were trying to tell me that if there was a way to cut it a little bit more. And I'm like, I don't want to lose the story itself. So it became the whole thing of, a lot of people said you need a prequel because you need to explain where Zeb and Vesna came from and why they are where they are. And that would be a very easy prequel to make. And then a lot of people, obviously, because of the ending, are saying, hey, clearly there will be a two, right? So there'll be a sequel. So I don't know which one I've had the most pressure on to create. But I do agree with you. It would have been really nice to have had the time to include the backstory of the demon so that people would be a little clearer on what they were so afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do have one question about that last confrontation. Zeb recognized her, that the female demon, that was mm-hmm. who he had fought before, right, and lost his eye to?
Yes.
I would love to see a short film of that encounter, just how that happened, because that would be cool.
Yeah, in the backstory, Zeb's girlfriend got possessed, like an exorcism type of possession. They thought they knew enough to try to drive the demon out, and they didn't, and they missed. And Killian essentially came to the rescue. So that is the backstory, and that I think it would be a lot of fun to touch on that at some point, and play that out, because the characters were really intriguing to play. They were a lot of fun.
So how did you handle the set design and the influences of the characters? Because some of the characters, I wasn't really sure where they fit into being haunted. Mm-hmm. And there just seemed like there was so much more backstory between Vesna and, was it Richie's wife, Cassidy? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, there seems like there's like more to that story of their friendship too. Like there's like maybe she had helped Cassidy out with another situation, which is why she believes in Vesna so much.
Yeah, no, I mean that is essentially the psychic that she has used for most of her major decision making up to that point, which mm-hmm. is why she brought her to the housewarming party, because she wanted to share in the abilities of Vesna as a medium, and didn't really, you know, expect this to happen.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, like I said, there was a lot of questions unanswered that mm-hmm. I wish you had more time in the film to address, or I don't know, maybe another pass, but you had said that, you know, you were open to the cast members putting in their own input into the script and everything. How different is the final film from the original script that you sent around and got, you know, greenlit and funded?
It's not very far at all. I just, I like using a script like a handrail, not like handcuffs. So for me, I've done this as an actor, I've worked for a lot of different filmmakers, and some of them, they give you handcuffs, and it doesn't matter if you can say it and feel it and believe it yourself, they want that line exactly the way it's written, and that's it. And then I've worked with filmmakers who say, I really want it the way it's in the book, but if there's something you just can't say, it doesn't feel right, you can't mean it, then feel free to make an adjustment to that. Come to me first to make sure that I'm fine with it. Don't add a monologue when it was supposed to be a yes and no answer. You know, you can't just change things. But to be open to interpretation, and even when somebody says, you know what, I don't think that we really get to know the characters enough. Maybe they should be a part of a scene earlier. Maybe they should be introduced in the first instead of in the second act. Because these are the type of things we as producers sit down before the film and look at and say, how relatable are the characters and how well and how full are they? Because as an actor, when you see a role, you want it to be multidimensional. It can't just be, you know, guy one and woman two. Like it has to be a being that you can really sink your teeth into and have enough of them that you can turn it into an interesting and intriguing character on the screen. So definitely very collaborative. I would say 96-97% of what's on the screen was in the script. Unfortunately, there were probably the first rough cut was, I think, 2 hours and 17 minutes.
Wow.
So there's a fair amount cut out from the film itself just because they couldn't make it. And like I said, I was actually asked, they said, you know, for an indie horror movie, an hour 50 is pretty long. And I said, the problem is you watch it and then tell me a scene that doesn't move the next scene. They trigger each other. It's really hard. And then if I have to go in and dissect the scenes and take out everything they say that's not related to the story, then it becomes almost a robot. So I was like, no, I'd rather, you know, see how it does like this. Because right now, at least the story makes sense. it leaves some for people to wonder, but I usually like a little bit of that because as an audience, I can decide myself, and that's sometimes fun. It also is a conversation piece afterwards. Me and my wife, when we watch something, we end up talking about it afterwards. And the thing I've noticed is the films that we don't talk about afterwards are kind of like you forget them after a day or two. You don't really think about them anymore. And there are some films that just linger in your head and you have to watch it again and just make sure that you got it. And maybe even look at, was this hinted before and I didn't see it? I remember doing that with Usual Suspects. I remember doing that with Fight Club. I wanted to see where was I supposed to get it or where did they give me an opportunity to get it and I just didn't connect the dots yet. And I love those kind of films. And my very first film, Moving Parts, has a lot of that element in it. And I try to have some in all of my films, a bit of mystery.
Now, you mentioned leaving the ending open. There's definitely a lot of questions about the ending. And all right, here's my question. What is the implication of what we saw and what we didn't see? Because everyone else who was in the room, we don't know what happened to them. Mm-hmm. We just see an injured Zeb, and we're not quite sure of Vesna's state. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the premise of it was that the blade was strong enough to weaken the demon back to its original state, which is how she got sent outside and stood outside of the door again, because she didn't have the strength to break through and come in. So that was what happened with the demon. My editor put the eyes on Vesna, and I said, oh my God, we can't do that. People are going to think leave that. It was not my idea at all. But it was really funny because my first thought was, we can't have this. People are going to think she got taken over. Oh, that is so cool. Leave that. That's great.
Well, I'm not going to ask you where that's supposed to go because I'm guessing that's how we slide into the sequel. But you mentioned the effect that your editor added. How did you determine the balance between practical effects and digital effects?
Oh, my goodness. That is a very complicated question. I prefer practical anytime I possibly can. But my editor's so well with the effect, on especially on Jan's face, mm-hmm. the burn marks in the hand, where you could almost swear that they're real. I was very, very happy with the split, but I will be honest with you. I made a film called Enigma, and I think I went a little too far with the practicals and possibly didn't have a strong enough editor to pull off the practicals. I'm not sure, but that is a struggle for every film to figure out the balance and to get it right. So hopefully that was pretty close to right, but I believe Fred Mossman did an incredible job with the post effects. And I think that on set between Nicole Deal and Nancy Oswine, I think they just absolutely nailed the practicals as well.
Nice. Yeah, the practical effects, especially in some of the scenes where our young, hungry demon was snacking. I'll just leave it at that. She was snacking in a couple of scenes there, and those... those were nicely done.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to make sure I did not skip over a touch of gore, because I do think that does belong. And I don't want to make one that is a film that is all jumps scare and tension. I like when you get a little bit of payoff every now and then, and when you get a couple of kills in, I think that you need some of that carnage.
Well, it was tastefully done. It wasn't too over the top, and it was just enough to inspire, shall we say, the fear in the people who witnessed. Yeah. That carnage, and that added to the atmosphere, the tension of the fear in the movie, which was the point of the film, because the demon feeds on fear. So congratulations on achieving that.
Thank you.
So where can people find you online to follow up on any sequel potentials for this film and any other projects you're working on?
So Facebook is probably one of my most interactive places, but I am everywhere. So Harley Wallen on Facebook. I have no more friends spaces, but I have my page open. So following is the same thing as being a friend. So I can interact, and you can post and comment and chat and interact. On Twitter, I have my old fighter name. I used to be a professional MMA fighter, and I've just kept the handle ever since. So it's Harley the Swede, Harley T-H-E-S-W-E-D-E. I will admit that I am not terribly good at interacting on Twitter. I don't think it's very conducive for dialogue and stuff, but I am on there, and I do respond. And then Instagram, which is Official Harley Wallen. I'm pretty busy on Instagram as well. I'm not as active as my wife, but I'm definitely pretty good about being on there. And if you're interested in the productions themselves, we are called Painted Creek Productions. And that has a Facebook page that has all of our projects, past and future. We actually have a family comedy coming out soon that's called A Bennett Song Holiday. And then we have another horror film where we went in a completely different direction and headed towards House of Wax and Texas Chainsaw Massacre had a baby.
Wow.
called Ash and Bone. And we went in that direction with some of the Rob Zombie influences, that's a really, I have very, very high hopes for that. We had Jamie Bernadette in for one of the leads, and she was incredible. Very, very good story written by a good friend of mine, Brett Miller. I just had to make that after I read it. It was incredible. So that one is in post-production. Right now, we are in pre-production of making our first stab at a vampire movie. I want to make vampires scary again, but I'm not going to make a hat about it. But it's a Viking origin vampire, which I don't think I've ever seen. But I thought it was an intriguing premise. So we're going to go there in a film called Beneath Us All. And I would like to bring us in a return more towards, 30 Days of Night or something in that direction of a vampire, and give it a unique reboot origin.
Awesome. Sounds very intriguing. We will have links to all of those places where people can follow up. I'd like to hear more about that vampire.
Ash and Bone?
The vampire one too, and Ash and Bone when they are ready. So keep that in mind. Because I like creative horror films as well as creative indie sci-fi films. But Harley, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Summer.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up to date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered in every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care. I told that devil
to take you back. Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
Not a lot of news right now. Just trying to arrange some stuff with Death Scribe, my favorite horror radio play competition, coming up at the end of March in Chicago. Still don't think I can make it this year, but you never know. A month is a long time. Sometimes. The spring season for sci-fi conventions is starting. If you are attending a convention and want to send in a report, audio or video, let me know. Go ahead and email me, summer@sliceofscifi.com, and we will chat. If you have any other questions or comments or suggestions for coverage, please feel free to contact me at that email address or call in. Leave a voicemail about it, 602-635-6976. And we will discuss whatever sci-fi, horror, paranormal, action, thriller, suspense, bit of entertainment that has caught your fancy lately. We got reviews up for the new DC animated feature, Superman Red Son. Our good friend Nerd Soul went and checked out the premiere in LA, so go check those videos out. We've linked to them on Twitter and from the Slice of Sci-Fi YouTube page. If you want to listen to more Slice of Sci-Fi, you can do so through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. If you're listening on iTunes or on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, go ahead and leave us a review. Let other people know you are enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. You can follow us on Facebook and YouTube. We are Slice of Sci-Fi there. And of course, there is the website, the hub of all this sci-fi geeky goodness, SliceOfSciFi.com. Come on over, check out the reviews, check out the interviews, leave a comment, weigh in on your own impression of a movie review or TV review. I'm catching up on a little thing. Got 5 episodes in reviews to finish up for Project Blue Book and Manifest. Those should be out this coming week, if all things go well. So we'll see there. What else? Oh, donations. Thank you, all of you who are helping support Slice of Sci-Fi, Writers After Dark, Babylon Podcast, Charlie Jade, Dragon Page, all the other shows, old and current, that are part of the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your support means so much to me. Keeping these sites and these shows online for people to still check out at their leisure is important to me. So any help you can lend to help me keep that going is fully appreciated. I cannot express how grateful I am to the people who are currently helping keep this going. So thank you, one and all. If you want to check out ways to help support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you don't want to commit to a monthly pledge, the place to go is paypal.me/scifisummer. You can send in a donation, dollar here, $5 there, once a year, twice a year, whatever best suits your situation. Either way, thank you. Thank you so much. The only other bit of news is I have a couple of new short story narrations coming up, and as soon as those are out there, I will let people know. They're not published yet, but they are in the works. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.